This is After Dark number 4. This is tape number 4. And this is side 2. And this is Fred Bobie in Great Northern Broadcast Company Studio B. So if you hear a little reverb on us, we're playing in the broadcast world now. And we have in our studios two gentlemen, actually one on telephone and one live and in person here. Bob Ulm is in our studios, and he's from WDOH-FM, Winning 107 in Delphus, Ohio. And we also have DX Audio Service member Mike Dukin, and Mike is from WOJB-FM in Hayward, Wisconsin. He joins us by telephone. Let's get right into this. Bob, let me ask you a question here. How did you get your start in radio?
How did I get started in radio? Well, ever since I was 3-4 years old, back in the late 50s and early 60s, I wanted to be on the radio. I would listen to various disc jockeys back in the good old days, and even often imitate their styles, tear radios apart to find out if there were really people in there, all that sorts of stuff. My parents, fortunately, took me around to the various communities, Fort Wayne, Lima, Toledo, places that had radio stations then, introduced me to the disc jockeys, the news people who were on the air at that time, and got a chance to meet some of those, and they all, as I recall, encouraged me tremendously, at least were friendly enough to give this little kid a handshake or what have you, show me the studio boards and so forth and so on that they worked at. And that's really what I always wanted to do. The radio station I work at now, WDOH here in Delphus, came on the air in December of 1972. I was a junior in high school at the time and would spend afternoons after school and weekends there badgering the people basically for a chance to get on the air. They were kind enough to allow me to horse around the studio boards at the time and so forth. And basically, I was a snot-nosed kid who was willing to work for nothing. The station was just about broke at the time and nearly off the air because of financial problems, so I would work for next to nothing, and that tickled them greatly. I started there at the radio station March 25th of 73, covering city council meetings. I was the only one who was willing to sit through 3- and 4-hour meetings for $10. And began at the radio station doing that. I worked through my senior year in high school, signing on in the morning, going to school, then coming back after school, and also did the same thing as I attended Ohio State University. Attended means you didn't graduate, because I thought I knew more than they did, and they didn't have many broadcasting courses in Lima, Ohio at the time, and I've been at the radio station ever since.
Well, how about you, Mike? How'd you get your start?
Okay, well, like a lot of us, which is why we all listen to the DX and listen and get the DX audio service. I was a DXer. I was a dial twister, first of all, I grew up in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, which is in the northwestern part of the state, which is actually 50 miles south of where I'm talking to you from, which is on the Lac-Couturier Ojibwe Reservation near the city of Hayward. Well, of course, I used to listen to the local stations, and then of course at night. The nighttime stuff came in, and I discovered rock and roll, and at that time WDGY was rocking out of Minneapolis, and then I attended school at the School for Visually Handicapped in Janesville, and of course all my friends and everybody listened to LS, and then in the early days WJJD and YNR, and then and CFL, and of course I've always wanted to do that, and I always wanted to go into radio, but of course at the time, it was commercial radio. I did some technical school work, got a certificate in piano tuning, and then from there went to a Catholic liberal arts college in my hometown of Ladysmith called Mount Scenario College. I went there on a Native Indian scholarship, combined with a little help from the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, and I took some music courses, but I transferred to the University of Minnesota at Duluth because they had a cool radio station up there. The radio station was WDTH, which was the magic word then, which was 1976, was they were a community alternative station, and that was new up in this area. What they did was the university bought a commercial license But they kept it non-commercial, but they kept the call letters and frequency, which was 103.3. And I could pick it up around here on certain days on good, you know, when they're, you know, when the reception from that way was coming in. And whenever I heard it, I would hear different music, you know, music like blues and folk music and jazz and stuff. And you know, the last time I heard blues was listening to John R. out of Nashville, you know. And whenever I heard the music always sounded good, but whenever the announcers came on, their levels were real low, and because they didn't always come in, so I couldn't understand too much what they were saying. So I said, well, I could do that. So I transferred to the Duluth campus where I could, you know, where I could have the radio station not, you know, close by. And well, sure enough, one day they said they were looking for volunteers, and so I walked in there and said, well, here I am, you know, I can do something. It was the first place that I went into where they didn't, you know, where they didn't turn me down. They said, well, we could use you for something. And I started producing public service things on cartridges and on carts and stuff. And then they gave me my own program. They gave me my own show, which was a jazz program, and that was the only opening they had at the time. But they did it providing that somebody would be with me to at first operate the board. Well, that person was a guy that lived in the same building I did, and he only did that one night, and he said, "Ah, you can do that yourself." And so he taught me, we both taught each other the board, and I did that for 5.5 years. I'd say about 3 years later, there was a person who was involved with starting community stations in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul. He started a station called KFAI, which stands for Fresh Air Incorporated, which is a community station. And at that time, they're only, 100 watts? Not much more than that. He was part of a grant that was started over there called the Blind in Broadcasting, where they got different blind people in the community in the Twin Cities to do radio over there and do shows. And a couple of years later, through work with Channel 2 Television in the Twin Cities, he got to know the Indian leaders in Minneapolis. One of them said that they needed better communications on the Lac-Couturier Reservation in northern Wisconsin. And Bob Albee said, well, what you need is a radio station. So negotiations and a whole bunch of planning started in several attorneys' offices and stuff. So when they started to plan WOJB, somebody heard about me because they heard me on the air, and they called me and asked me about myself, and I told the people that heard me. I said, well, I'm a tribal member too, and they looked into my records, and they sure enough they found that out, and they said, how would you like to work for us? I said, you know, and it was a little getting used to, because at the time I was a typical blind person, you know, too. I lived the urban lifestyle and travel, you know, got on the city bus and, you know, traveled the streets like that, you know,
So you're also an Indian too?
Yes, I am. Yes,
full-blooded.
I'm a quarter. My grandparents, my grandpa was full blood. My grandma was half. Made my mother 3/8, and I guess that makes me a quarter. if we're in the technicalities here.
Yeah.
But the fact that I am Indian, and, you know, and a member of this tribe, is that's what got my start here, and that's kind of part of my longevity. I've been here 12 years.
Well, obviously, with a lot of the stuff in radio, such as the Associated Press Newswire and the transmitter meters and stuff like that, I mean, you have to have some special equipment. Bob, what kind of equipment do you have to use?
That question's pretty simple. Really not very much. In the early days, starting in 1973, I had a product from Science for the Blind out in Pennsylvania, which was an audio comparator that was hooked up in the transmitter metering circuit. I had a meter for plate voltage, a meter for plate current, and also a meter for frequency. At that time, we had to monitor constantly our FM frequency to make sure that it was near the center carrier. And this was a little four-position meter, which I still have at the station and still functions. I got my first Braille teletype machine in 1975. It was an old LED-1 made by Triformation Systems that I'm sure many people are familiar with, a big old clunker, much like the Model 19 teletype machines that people have. Currently, the only adaptive equipment I have, I have a couple of pieces. I have an IBM typewriter, one of the typewriters that you type in regular type and types out Braille. The secretaries can leave notes for me, phone messages, that sort of thing, script from time to time that I have to record for someone else. I have a 386SX computer with a regular printer for the script that I write and the contracts that I write for other people. As well as I have an Arkenstone document reader, which I've just gotten in the last year to year and a half. And for about the last 4 to 5 years, I've been using a Romeo RB40 Braille printer, which is connected to the Associated Press wire service. The AP service is the one that we have here. Don't use any kind of specific sort of audio meters or any of that sort of thing in either the studios, or either the three studios that we use at the radio station. I set the levels that I use by ear using the on-air monitor as a comparative circuit. I have both a Perkins electric Braille writer, and I also have a Perkins manual Braille writer that I keep at the radio stations to write my news copy that I do each day, sales copy and so forth, commercials, that sort of thing on. And basically that, with the use of various and sundry cassette recorders and so forth, are the type of assistance that I have. The only special help that I have at the radio station, the night operator, will read on tape for me news releases and information that comes in during the day. During the previous day, he will leave that on a cassette tape for me, and then I'll tear it apart for news the next morning.
And how about you, Mike? How do you do that at WOJB-FM?
Well, Fred, the secret of all this is compared to others that you might talk to, my situation is almost pretty low tech. Our control board, which is brand new as of a month ago, is all Braille and labeled, numbered, and stuff like that. I have a Versa Braille printer, which prints out the announcements I read. Being that we're public radio, community radio, we have underwriting announcements, so I read those, and that comes through the Versa Braille printer, which is connected to a computer terminal. Other than that, and my Braille writer, that's about it.
Well, it sounds pretty simple, but how would you describe your typical day, Mike? I mean, what kind of things do you normally do?
Okay, well, my schedule is I come in at about 12:30, quarter to one. I go in there and look at the CDs and records I'm going to play for my afternoon show, which is from 1 until 3:30. It's just basically called the PM edition, due to lack of a better word. And it's an eclectic mix. I guess that's the magic word these days: folk and bluegrass and blues and little jazz, little rock and roll, little country, because some of the reservation people like country music. I mix it all up. Monday is my long day, because I'm also, besides, okay, every day I'm there until my music show's up there until 3:30, and then at 3:30 we have our news block. We do three different news programs. Besides All Things Considered from National Public Radio and As It Happens from Canada, by way of American Public Radio, we also bring what a lot of stations don't bring unless you're in certain areas. We bring the Pacifica Radio, Pacifica Newscast from Washington, from the Pacifica News Bureau, which is, in a way, it's pretty... Well, I don't know. I suppose it's pretty considered left-wing compared to everything else. It's nothing you'll hear on mainstream media. We bring that newscast. I tech all that stuff. Do breaks on the half hour. And while all that's going on Mondays, I put the records and CDs away, and then by 5:30 I get ready for my other show, which is at 7 o'clock. It's Blue Monday. It's one of the longest and most popular programs we do. It's Blue Monday. It's blues.
Okay. What kind of blues do you play?
Oh, I mix everything. You know, Delta stuff, acoustic stuff. The real commercial stuff like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Robert Cray, Johnny Winter, that stuff. To my favorites, Muddy Waters, Bo Diddley, even Chuck Berry, Johnny Taylor, you know, and the traditional stuff that John R. and those guys used to play. And then on Friday afternoons, as part of the PM edition, I call it the Friday Show. It's rhythm and blues and soul music and Motown, and 90% of it is from my own collection.
Bob, what about your time over at WDOH?
My day starts at 3 o'clock in the morning. I arrive at the radio station about 3:40 or thereabouts. I make about 50 to 60 police calls each morning to the various police departments and sheriff's departments in the area. I co-host a four-hour-long morning show between 5 and 9, do all the news portions of those programs, write 10 complete newscasts each day, and I also do about 60% or thereabouts of the radio station sales after 9 o'clock in the morning. Write on an average and record about 12 to 15 spots a day. And also get involved from time to time in the various programming things and so forth that have to be done at the radio station. So these are very, very long, fun-filled sometimes, and always interesting days.
Well, Bob, what are some of the biggest obstacles to a blind radio announcer?
The biggest obstacles to being a blind announcer, that's a pretty easy one. The biggest obstacle that anybody who wants to be on the air who can't see is convincing management that they're capable of doing the work. It seems to me that people who can't see should make, by nature, better announcers, better broadcasters, because the only way we have to get and gather information is to hear it, for most part, in large part. So we ought to be better versed, better able to disseminate that information, to talk to people as opposed to talking at them, because that's how we communicate with other people, not with with body language, facial expressions, and so forth and so on. It is very difficult to convince management of that. Case in point, in 1977, the radio station and myself won a national Associated Press Award for the best small market news operation in the entire country. I've received awards from United Press International in 1982 and 1987, and from Associated Press in 1990. In all those cases, I have had radio stations from larger markets contact me about going to work there, unsolicited requests for resumes and so forth. The conversations generally stop and the interest generally ceases when I point out to them, and I always do very early, that I can't see. No sense beating around the bush. But it is an obstacle to employment. Fortunately, I like it where I am. It's a very small town, about 7,000 people, but very easy to get around with a dog in all types of weather, and the kids and my wife like it here, so... And because I do so much sales, you can make a relatively comfortable living here. But if it weren't for that, it's extremely difficult for someone who can't see, particularly in today's deregulated, non-news, $4.25 an hour announcer help, to convince management that it is worth that risk of going out on the limb to hire somebody who can't see.
The biggest obstacle, I think, is getting hired. Yeah, I really think so. The biggest obstacle is letting people know. I want to be able to say this right.
Well, let me just put it this way. I mean, to those of our listeners who are blind, they know where you're coming from, and to those of us who are sighted, this is something I think a lot of us need to know.
Okay.
So don't feel afraid. Don't be afraid that you're going to hurt anyone's feelings.
Well, I don't want to say the wrong thing. The best, okay, I guess the biggest obstacle is letting a programmer or a station manager know that as a blind person, hey, I can do this as good as anybody. Because you know, radio is really our medium. It's typically audio. I don't know. Let's see. I'd say the biggest obstacle is the station not knowing what we can do. I guess is the best way I can put that. I guess.
But do you feel because you rely on sound more so than sight? That you have a little bit more ability than, say, a sighted announcer.
Maybe not much. You know, not much more than that. I guess we're more aware of things than sighted announcers are. Because we do have to use our ears more. I don't think my hearing is better than the people I work with. In some cases, yeah, I guess in some cases it is. I've been able to use some of that to my advantage, because our station's not really formatted. I can play anything I want to do, anything I want to play and do what I want to do. And I've been known to, to match up certain pieces that are in the same key. There's a gimmick I used to use more so when we first went on the air and when I first started getting my independence in this field, I used to sometimes would say the last 15 minutes were brought to you in the key of A, and it probably and you know it was too.
That's kind of neat. I've never heard that done.
Well, I don't know. I'm the first. I've been told that I'm the first that's been doing that. That's done that.
That's real good.
So I've been using my background in piano tuning and stuff to my advantage or that advantage anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess the biggest thing that's got to happen is that station managers and program directors got to know that we can do this as good as the next guy.
Well, I understand that, Mike, but I mean there are certain things in the job that you have to do. I mean, let me ask Bob this question, and what must a blind announcer be able to do on the job
before anyone who can't see can consider a career in radio? They have to have ability to be able to read without question and with better enthusiasm and with better ability than the other rest of the applicants who are sighted. I didn't say as well, I said better, because obviously we have to have a jump or an edge on those other folks in order to even be considered for a job. Many people who are blind who've asked me about radio as a career, I've attempted to lead them in other directions because they did not read very well, and the ability to read Braille is less and less important to society in general, but it is as important as ever in the radio business, because you have to have that ability, just like the sighted folks do, to rip that piece of copy off the AP wire or off the National Weather Service wire and read that bulletin on the air immediately. Read a public service announcement that you've never read before without stumbling, and read that piece of commercial copy that was due on the air 30 seconds ago and just gets handed to you now. That is an absolutely crucial thing you have to be able to do.
Okay, Mike, the ball's in your court now. What do you say?
Well, I guess they got to be able to. Know what they're going to say. Go in there with the confidence that they can that they can do this. I don't know. Know the layout of the station.
Is radio a good career for someone who is blind to get in?
Well, it is. Although, like a lot of other things, radio goes through changes. I don't know. I've talked to a lot of other blind announcers that have been in it, and maybe it's I don't know who station's fault, and maybe sometimes that the station hasn't been able to they haven't been able to keep up with the changes that the station goes through. In commercial radio sometimes it's a here today gone tomorrow thing. With me, I guess I've lucked out, and I don't know, some, and for the fact that I've been able to keep up, you know, keep up with this, with the changes that OJB goes through, and you know, I'm liked enough that, you know, that people think that I'm a big asset, you know, an asset to the station, and should be kept around. I mean, you know, I could, you know, probably go to a bigger city and probably have nothing, but here I am in the north. Here I am in the north woods of Wisconsin, and I'm we're still going strong here, you know.
It can be a good career for the blind. It is certainly not the best career for the blind. It seems that a lot of people who can't see are, for some reason, drawn magnetically to broadcasting as a career. But it is a very difficult business to get into, first of all, and perhaps even more difficult, not just for the blind, but for everybody else involved, to make a decent living at, particularly given the situation with more than half the radio stations not making money these days. There's not a lot of money to go around, and a lot of people have wasted, quite frankly, a lot of money on degrees that not allowed them to make a decent living. And since that's what it's all about, is making a living, it can have its pitfalls. The recognition doesn't make much difference if you can't pay your bills. And while it is nice to be recognized as someone on the radio, and it's something I've always wanted to do, I'm not sure that it's the career for everyone or even half of everyone.
Bob, what kind of hobbies do you have personally? Let's get off broadcasting for a second here. What kind of things do you like to do outside of the radio biz?
Well, I'm an avid amateur radio operator. My call letters are WB8FBD. I've been licensed since I was 13 back in 1969, and enjoy very much the high-frequency work, the DXing, if you will, and also operate an awful lot on the 2-meter and 440 bands. I have handy talkies for both of those, and most of my operating is done as I walk about 3/4 of a mile to and from the radio station early each morning, and then in the afternoon when my day is finished, talking to some of my friends around the area. I'm also a musician. I learned early to play the piano and keyboards, and did that professionally, semi-professionally, for about 17 years, currently not playing in a band, but play now for my own enjoyment. In addition to that, I have a little private business in my home. The business that I am involved in, I record commercials for the supermarket, several of the supermarket chains in this area, and also record those dreaded messages on hold on telephone systems that so many people hate. I do those out of my home in my own little personal studio, and that's one of the other sidelines that I have.
What about you, Mike?
Oh, I play a little piano, a little boogie-woogie and blues piano. Of course, I collect air checks. I have a wide variety of stuff, and, you know, I send you things, and so I make tapes for people. I read books. I dabble just a little bit with ham radio. I'm a novice KB9FHY. Meeting people. I listen to sports. Of course, right now it's all college. It's college basketball and stuff. I'm enjoying that. And of course, baseball. They're in the baseball season, and of course, like to go fishing when I can. I don't know. I do a whole bunch of stuff, I guess.
Keep busy, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing that is kind of amazing is some of the new technology. And first of all, I'd like to thank you guys for being in the studio here and talking to me about the subject. One thing I'd like to kind of give our audio service members a little taste of is some of the technology that is out there now for aiding the blind. Several years back, a company by the name of Gentner Electronics, which is originally based out of Utah, came out with a voice remote control unit. We've got their newer version here, which is basically the same as the old version. And this allows a blind person to be able to actually get the readings off the transmitter, get status and everything. And what we'd like to do is kind of demonstrate this. We've got it in the other room connected to the little transmitter that we use here on the automation system to demonstrate programming and such. So we're actually not only going to be able to turn on the transmitter, you'll be able to hear it come on the air, and let's just give it a try. First thing you got to do. Now, what we're doing is we're calling up the transmitter remote control. It's a Gentner VRC2000, and it will answer by saying, "Hello, this is WXYZ AM540. Please enter your access code." At that time, we have to give it a code number of 12345.
"Hello, this is WXYZ AM540 transmitter. Please enter access code."
Now we enter our access code.
"Thank you. No alarm pending."
Now what we're going to do is warm up the transmitter. That's on channel 1, so we type in...
"Command channel 1. Transmitter power. Transmitter off."
Okay, the transmitter is off at the present time, so let's warm it up.
"Transmitter on."
What we can do at the present time while we're waiting for the transmitter to warm up is check out and see if there's any alarms on the system. Perhaps maybe it's a little too warm in the room or something. So we'll just check that real quick.
"No alarm pending."
Okay, if there was any alarms, what we could do is we can clear them out. So the next time we call that we don't find those sitting there.
"Alarm erased."
Now, if for some reason you do have an alarm, let's say, for example, you want to know if the air conditioner is running in the room. Well, you could hook it up to a metering system, or you can listen to it. And that's done the following way. We type in the code and listen.
"Sound sensor enabled."
Okay, now what we can do is we can turn off the sound sensor.
"Sound sensor disabled."
Okay, I think it's about time to put the station on the air, and when you do hear it come on the air, you'll hear music because we have the automation system running at the present time. So as soon as it comes on the air, you will hear music on the radio, which is sitting right near next to me. So let's give a listen here.
"Command channel 2, radio carrier. Carrier off."
Okay, the carrier's off at the present time. Let's turn it on.
"Carrier on."
And you can hear the radio in the background. Now, I wonder how much power we're putting out on the air right now. Well, keep in mind, this is a closed system. We're only operating with a couple milliwatts from the next room for test purposes only. So the power is going to be rather low. In fact, it's going to be milliwatts. Let's check it out and see exactly what we have on the system.
"Metering channel 1. Transmitter output 25.06 milliwatts."
25.06 milliwatts. Let's see how much it drifts. We'll just let it talk.
"Metering channel 1. Transmitter output 25.06 milliwatts."
Okay, he'll keep talking to me here.
"25.06 milliwatts."
Should keep talking.
25.06 milliwatts. 25.06 milliwatts.
And we want to disconnect.
"Goodbye."
And that's it.
"Next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Hello, fellow DX Audio Service members. This is Bob Alm from Delphus, Ohio, with a bit of radio interesting information, at least might be interesting to some of you. Most folks know that the requirement for radio stations, both AM and FM, in the United States is to identify, giving their call letters followed immediately by their city of license as the nearest possible break to the top of the hour. That's a requirement that has not changed. Regardless of what you may hear these days on the AM and FM broadcast bands, it's still something that the FCC says is the way it wants business to be done. At 93.5 here in Northwest Ohio is the station WRQN in Bowling Green / Toledo. Bowling Green is their city of license. And they may have a little problem should there ever be an FCC engineer or inspector listening closely. This is how the radio station identifies at approximately 8 minutes before the hour of 11 o'clock on Saturday the 8th.
Remember, in your area, the Woolworth Going Out of Business Total Liquidation Sale applies only at these five locations. See newspaper ad for the location nearest you. It's business as usual at all other Woolworth stores.
WRQN Bowling Green, Toledo.
Nobody does it like you.
But at exactly 11 o'clock, or within 30 seconds of the top of the hour, this is how that same radio station identifies itself.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a tribute to the King Weekend on Toledo's only all-oldies station.
Oldies 93.5, WRQN, Toledo.
That air check is not perhaps all that unusual. It is certainly extremely unfortunate and not a very unusual occurrence anymore these days either of radio stations in suburban communities attempting to be part of the larger city. So, at 93.5, when you're listening in Northwest Ohio, you are listening to WRQN Bowling Green, not WRQN Toledo.
From 1922 to 1992, WBT remembers 70 years of great radio.
Economic chaos, world wars, the murders of world leaders. The events of the past 70 years have come fast and furious and caused fundamental change in our lives. And through it all, WBT Radio was there, bringing the sounds of change home. In the second half of the century, the pace of change accelerated, and helping us understand it was Edward R. Murrow and the McCarthy hearings.
The line between investigating and persecuting is a very fine one, and the junior senator from Wisconsin has stepped over it repeatedly.
The trademark, the motorcade is coming by here. I can see many, many motorcycles coming by now, police motorcycles. Just heard a call on the radio for all units along Industrial to pick up the motorcade. Something has happened here. We understand there has been a shooting.
My four children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream.
Senator Robert Francis Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m. today, June 6, 1968.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
Some 30 minutes ago, the planes bearing our prisoners left Iranian airspace and are now free.
Something has gone seriously wrong.
A major tragedy.
We have no downlink.
A major tragedy in the making in this shuttle mission.
We have no downlink is the word from mission control. Something has gone gravely wrong in the shuttle itself.
It's disappeared.
It's not been heard from. Disappeared in a cloud of smoke.
With 70 years of memories, I'm John Stokes.
And finally, a little salute to all the call-letters that we all know and love.
TM, we listen to you, and you must be listening to us. At TM, we do it all, and better than anyone else. WNBC, IBG, XYZ, KRLA, YOK, DIA, WABZ.
finally learned how to pronounce Norfolk.
WNBC,
KADA,
WSAI,
KCBQ,
WMAQ,
WQXI,
XWY,
WWJ,
CFL,
ISN, WIBG,
WMBS,
Pittsburgh,
KDWD,
WCBA,
we put another DX Audio service back in the bag. Until next time, we sincerely hope that you've liked this edition of After Dark number 4, and it goes without saying that you should give us your comments, your critiques, your bouquets, your brickbats, anything that you have to say. It's always a pleasure hearing from you, no matter if it's a criticism or not. We'd like to find out exactly what kind of material that you would like to hear on a future edition of After Dark or on the DX Audio service. Your comments are always welcome. Just let us know what kind of things interest you, what kind of things you think we should be covering, or maybe something that's just of interest or question you might have. Just drop us a card or a letter and send it to Ken Chatterton, C-H-A-T-T-E-R-T-O-N, at the National Radio Club's Publication Center, Post Office Box 164, Mansville, M-A-N-N-S-V-I-L-L-E, New York, 13661, USA. And, well, let's see what we can do on After Dark number 5. We might be able to get one out relatively soon. We have a lot of material, a lot of things to cover. And, of course, with your suggestions, we can add a lot of material. And if you even have something that you think belongs on an After Dark edition, by all means, send it to us here at the DX Audio Service. We can take it either by via cassette or reel-to-reel, pretty much any type of format that you might have. Our address here at the DX Audio Service is National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802-5031. That's it. We'll see you on After Dark number 5, coming soon to a theater near you. 73s, folks, I'm going back to bed. Bye. Hey, there was 10 seconds left on the tape. I had to fill it up.